I'm in the middle of a marathon.
Just like AMC, American Masturbation Classics.
You're listening to the Still Queer as Folk podcast. Each week, we take down an episode of Showtime's Queer as Folk TV show to find out if it still holds up 17 years later. I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
This is episode 5 of season 2, and it's called Wherever That Dream May Lead You.
It first aired in the U.S. on February 3rd, 2002.
It was directed by David Wellington. This is his third of 8 Queer as Folk episodes. Before this, he directed 2 season 1 episodes, Smells Like Codependence and Good Grief. 2 of our favorites.
Wherever That Dream May Lead You was written by showrunners Ron Cohen and Daniel Lippman, with Ephraim Seeger, who also wrote the teleplay. This is his first of 8 episodes as a writer, and he also produced 34 episodes of Queer as Folk. Amusingly enough, he also wrote 6 episodes and produced 19 episodes of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
I hated that show.
How dare you? That show was amazing and groundbreaking.
Well, that's Queer as Folk, right? I did learn the Carlton dance, though, about the time that it was airing on TV.
I need video footage of this as soon as possible, and I will post them on our Facebook page, so make sure you like us on our Facebook page to see that video.
It requires copious amounts of whiskey and a gay bar for me to pull it off.
Done. What are you doing after the recording, Patrick?
Musical Mondays. Sidetrack. Yes. The Showtime synopsis for this episode. As a result of his gay bashing, Justin loses his motor skills necessary to succeed in art school and is forced to drop out, while Michael decides to quit his job at the Big Q and risk everything to buy a comic book store. Meanwhile, Ted becomes an entrepreneur as well, ditching his new accounting job to start his own porno website.
IMDb synopsis. Ted decides to start a gay website.
A gay website.
Listeners, you couldn't tell, but I rolled my eyes very hard at that. Justin decides to leave art school until his motor skills return. Michael quits his job to open his own comic book store.
That's interesting. Until his motor skills return. I don't think that Justin knew if his motor skills would return.
Right. That's the conflict of the episode.
Yeah. So we have the Showtime synopsis, which tells the entire story in 4 sentences. And we have the IMDb synopsis, which is just wrong.
It almost seemed like, ah, shit, we got to type something down. Here are a few sentences. What do you think? Great. Put it up.
One thing I liked about this episode, the way it started, was a drag king show. Drag kings aren't something that you hear too much about these days. I don't know why. Has that type of entertainment faded away? Or what became of the drag kings?
Oh, I think they're, I don't want to say a resurgence, but I think drag kings have always been there. And we're also seeing performers who do drag, like bio queens, and we're seeing a growth in the drag world
in the type of
drag we're seeing, which is super exciting.
This episode starts in Woody's, where everybody's there. This apparently is like a great big event for the entire gang. I've gotta follow that dream wherever that dream may lead.
I've gotta follow that dream behind. Since when did Woody's become a country club?
Since you're here.
And it's because there's this drag king show, which I thought looked great. And everyone seemed to be having a great time but Brian. So he was kind of being Buzz Killington at this moment.
Did you notice that Melanie and Lindsay were in sort of light king clothing?
They were just living their butch fantasy, and I was here for it.
Yeah, I thought it was funny that they were the only ones in the crowd that had any kind of a costume ready to go.
it's kind of like how we see some members of the gay community who want to live their drag queen fantasy. So they'll throw on a wig, they'll throw on a little, makeup. But kind of stop there. They only do it every once in a while.
Have you ever done drag, Matt?
I once tried to walk in heels and I like stomped around, and not in a sexy way. So I just got to get used to it, but I think I could pull off a look.
This just made me remember
did drag?
Well, I technically did drag, but I was in third or fourth grade. And I remember being in elementary school and it was Halloween. And I told my mother that I wanted to dress up as a woman for Halloween, and she was all for it. She gave me a dress, and she sort of taught me how to do makeup, and I was a woman for Halloween in like fourth grade.
And then what, took you to Paris is Burning?
I don't know. That's kind of where the memory ends. I don't remember anything other than walking around trick-or-treating at school in that, and somebody called me Maud. And it was a grown-up, too. So at the time, I can technically say that I did drag then, right?
Bull B. Arthur mod realness. I'm here for it.
I wonder if I have pictures of that someplace. Probably.
Find pictures of that, along with video of you doing the Carlton dance from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
It's funny. I don't know if I told you this before, but so many of my friends have said that they'd found out more about me through this podcast than they ever knew, just in hanging out with me and knowing me.
It's like you're opening up to be a whole new person. It's great.
Yeah. All through the wonders of Queer as Folk. The intro dialogue to this episode was introducing everyone's dreams. It was a little cheesy, but it was nice to kick off the episode with a little bit of a tip of what we were about to see. And I noticed that Ted wasn't there. He wasn't at Woody's at the country club. And Emmett decides that they have to go get him. And of course, they get to his house and he is completely in the throes of rubbing one out.
Ted, what are you doing?
What the hell does it look like?
God, it smells like a bathhouse in here. When's the last time you left this place?
4 days. I'm in the middle of a marathon.
Just like AMC. American Masturbation Classics.
And I couldn't help but thinking that Ted really, really fell a long way since the last episode where he had the pity fuck on Pride from Troy.
That was quite the hit to his very already fragile ego.
Yeah, he went into like a corkscrew downward spiral.
Tailspin.
Yeah. It was funny because I don't know how many people are going to stay home and jack off for 4 days straight, but he was given a go there.
His stamina of masturbating that long?
Well, in all fairness, they did give him enough lines and Scott Lowell did play it off well enough that he was physically exhausted. There was an episode where Ted looked like he had just ridden a Pony Express across the country when he had stayed up all night fucking Blake.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think that was episode 22 of last season.
Oh, the finale. Okay.
Yeah. I think that's when Blake fell off the wagon, became a meth head again. And Ted said, oh, well, I might as well get one night in this.
Ted. But luckily, Emmett is there for the save. Try and get him out of his disgusting apartment. Considering how nice he kept that condo, it was sad to see the state it was in.
Yeah.
And he was going from like his bedroom where he was watching a VHS of porn to his computer where he had the dial-up ready.
DemonDick.com.
Demon Dick. Oh my God.
So I think the most interesting story in this episode was Justin. The first shot that we see of Justin is this nice lingering shot of his butt as he's blowing Brian. Thank you, David Wellington. That shot was gorgeous. It was in the blue light that we've been seeing all this mm-hmm. season. Whenever Justin and Brian are getting it on, the blue lights come on in Brian's bedroom. There's this long lingering shot that pans up Justin's legs to the buttocks. And we see that. Don't laugh at me. I'm being dramatic, Matt. And we see that he's blowing Brian and he swallowed.
Because spitters are quitters.
Yeah.
Plus they're in a somewhat committed relationship.
Oh, I have no problems with anybody swallowing, but I don't think that we've ever seen that before.
I feel like it's implied a lot of the times.
Yeah, but now we got to see it.
Hey.
As Justin comes up, he kind of like licks his lips and makes a gulp and hold on. It's like, loved it.
He makes a gulp.
Yeah. And Justin doesn't want to get fucked because it's his first day of school. And there's another thing that I'd never seen before, which is Brian blowing Justin. Had we ever seen that? I don't think so.
I don't know if we've ever seen it. It's definitely been implied that it happened because he even says, Brian tells him, when have you ever turned down having your dick sucked?
Yeah, but I didn't think it was by Brian.
Sure.
So right away, David Wellington is giving us like an awful lot of sexy shots and things that we hadn't seen before. So right away, I was thinking, okay, I'm starting to dig this episode. I think last week I had groaned at this one because I just remember hating it. And already I'm kind of digging it. Right away, we see that Justin is having motor skill problems right on the eve of his first day of art school. That was a little foreshadow as he's trying to draw Brian and his hand is just shaking uncontrollably. Not surprising since he took a baseball bat to the head many episodes ago.
And it's also not just the brain injury that we saw him doing a lot of physical therapy for. There's also been studies about PTSD and how that affects the motor skills. at the time of this recording, I'm working on a show, on a play where a character is going through that exact thing. And we just had a movement coach come in and talk about where that movement comes from and how you portray that kind of thing after a trauma. And so it's very fascinating to have just sat in a rehearsal where we discussed that and then see that in this episode as well.
What is a movement coach?
In this particular play, this character has experienced a very horrific trauma and she has to make this very tough decision. And the way the struggle and the stress of the decision she has to make is manifested is in this shake that her right hand has. So we worked with someone who helped with our actor to create what this movement looked like and how to make it feel like it's of the moment rather than feel like it's just this manufactured thing and she's just shaking her hand every which way. But it also allows her to do it safely and to find a place where she wouldn't be tired, because in the play she does have to do these moments like where she has to sign the same document 4 times and has to like show this struggle. And so it was fascinating to watch this movement coach work with her.
Nice. This must have been quite some art school for Justin, because on day one, they're drawing from life.
Nude model day one. Like, I know it's art school, but I would have thought they would have just started with like a syllabus.
Yeah.
Like, here's what you're going to learn in drawing one.
Yeah, day one, they've got the male model. There is a nude woman in the background also that another group of students was drawing.
Clearly, I was more interested in the male nude model.
It's interesting how some of this drama was manufactured around Justin dealing with what is honestly a disability that he had.
Yes.
But they put so much drama into it and he was hiding it. The dean, who looked very much like art school dean.
With like a black turtleneck and everything.
Yeah.
I thought it was Steve Jobs for a second. Yeah.
The dean's just quizzing Justin about whether he's up for the challenge of art school.
You're a very talented young man, Justin. You wouldn't have been admitted to IFA if you weren't. But as you know, this is a very strenuous program. I think you need to seriously consider whether you're able to meet the requirements.
I mean, like, I'm sorry, you cannot dismiss him from an art school because of his injury.
Yeah, that's...
Hold up.
That's why I thought this was a little bit of manufactured drama, because you'd think that an art school would recognize that the student has a disability and make accommodation for him. And in fact, they may be legally required to.
Oh, absolutely. That's where I thought this conversation was going to go, you know, and give him the boost that he needed. But we see that happen later on in the episode.
Yeah, I wanted to like that art school dean, but right away he was just kind of, he turned it around on Justin where he says, you're a very talented young man. Do you think you can do this? Get the fuck out of here.
Ugh. I was like, shoe fly, don't bother me.
Yeah, I think we see that art school dean again in a few episodes.
Ugh, okay.
I thought it was a little thin that Justin quit on the first day and headed right to Babylon to become a professional hot mess.
I think everyone in this cast has to have their opportunity to be that hot mess at Babylon.
I did like how Brian was just very amazed and astonished at Justin kind of bouncing around the club. And he was clearly like on stuff. And Brian's just kind of looking at him like this bemused look. That was a really, really big day for Justin. It went really fast.
Oh, that's
he got
one
a
hell of a
job the night before.
That's one hell of a day one.
Got kicked out or went to art school, decided not to go to art school, went to Babylon, became the hot mess.
Fucked the random dude.
That's right. Go, Justin.
My first day of college was not like that, so.
I think everybody's dream first day of college will be like that. There's a little bit of kind of contrived story going on here where Brian shows up at work and they find the state-of-the-art computer that you can draw with a stylus with. It was quaint. And
to put it, yes.
You got to remember, this is like 2001. So 2002. So I think the state-of-the-art computer back then was the original iMac, the big bubbly looking thing with the handle on the CRT where you could pick up the whole thing. We see Michael using one later.
Is that the way, like, yeah, you can get like the different color backs to it?
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. So I like the scene that Brian saw that device and immediately recognized like, hey, Justin could use this. And so it was another Brian 2.0 moment that I remember last season, you were just furious that I always was trying to find good in Brian. And
here the text here we're supports seeing it. That he can be good even when he's a total prick.
True. Justin comes back to the loft after Brian has acquired the computer. Did he just boost that from his office or did he find one and
buy
it?
Oh, I'm sure he did. Who?
He's grabbed it and walked out?
He gives a fuck about what people think about him giving and taking from the office? Hell, he's been fucking people left and right in that office. I don't think they care if he took a fancy piece of equipment.
What was the name of that ad exec that he fucked on his desk? The sexual harassment one. What was that guy's name?
Kip.
Kip.
His name is Kip.
Kip. Kip Thomas.
Kip Thomas, yes.
That's right. I did like how when Justin got back that first night, there was that callback to the very first episode when Brian poured a bottle of water over his head. Justin comes in and does the same thing. Who did it better? I think Justin did it better.
I think Justin's was more earned. Brian's was like so obviously him showing his hand that I was like, eh.
I don't know why Justin was doing it, but I loved it.
Why not?
Yeah. Brian shows him the computer. And I was a little surprised by the writing here because Justin reacts badly when he sees the computer and he just kind of snaps. And he immediately gave up on art after one day and turned into a club kid. And then he's taking it all out on Brian, who is only trying to help him.
So you're just gonna quit?
It's over, all right? Accept it. I'm not gonna draw again. And no fucking electronic Crayola box is gonna fix that.
I just thought that the writing was a little too fast and loose there. He had one day at class. He had one offhand remark from the dean. So they could have carried this story like several episodes.
I can see your point in that it felt a little convenient and a little tidy to try and fit this struggle in one episode. However, I do see that it still shows that Justin still has to grow up a little.
Interesting.
Like having to handle things that life is throwing at him. I mean, adults deal with it every day that they sometimes get questioned. And
yeah, we're forgetting he's 18.
Yeah, he's still 18.
And a twink.
Twink notwithstanding.
Did you see him blow up at Debbie?
Maybe you ought to give your hand a rest, huh, Sunshine?
Maybe you should mind your own fucking business.
What did you just say to me?
I said, mind your own business.
Yeah, I heard what you said.
Then why'd you ask me to repeat it?
I want to be sure I heard it correctly.
Leave me the fuck alone.
Debbie still managed to find a way to crack the wall that he's put up and continue to be that mother figure that she is to all the boys and still put him in his place about the way he spoke to her.
And one more thing. The next time you talk to me like that, I'm going to rip you a new butthole so big you're going to be able to take a cannon up your ass.
I just love that she had such a good comeback, just ready to go.
Oh, I had no doubt in my mind that she would.
What do you make of Justin's total just lack of trying here, though? He immediately just gave up. And that's the part that in the whole story, I just couldn't get my arms around it. It was just like too quick.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily track because of the way he was so determined during his physical therapy to get better,
To get to Brian.
Yeah, and well, to get to Brian,
no,
sure.
No, he got Brian. He lives with him. Got blown by him the night before.
But now that he's made the goal of going for it, I don't know if with kids, when they see something that feels too hard, they need to...
He was a pre-millennial millennial?
Maybe that's what it is, and that it takes people to continue to say that he can do it and find ways to help him move along. It's a weird thing for his character, considering the other struggles we've seen him push himself to overcome.
It's interesting you say that, because Lindsay did find a way to get that fire back into him and takes him to a gallery opening, and what a coincidence and what great luck that the artist that she took him to was disabled.
She's not a great art teacher for nothing.
That's true.
And I love what the art teacher or what the artist says about how she works like two snails fucking very slowly. And I was like, that's good.
I thought the intro to this scene was a little corny. It's like, oh, Lindsay's here. Like she's just mysteriously at the diner and having lunch with Emmett. And then it's like, oh, Justin's having trouble. Let's take him to this art gallery of the disabled artists. So I thought that was a little corny, but then I started to like the way that this was written, because I thought the Adrian character, the artist, quickly figured out what Justin's problem was and started to give him really pointed encouragement. I just thought it was strange that Lindsay, first of all, took him there, and then Lindsay was so taken aback that Adrian, the artist, offered Justin a painting. I don't know. I went back and forth between, is this good writing? Is this bad writing? Is this a good script or is this bad? It eventually occurred to me that this is early 2000s. This is how television was written then. Introduce a quick problem, solve the problem in the same scene.
Yeah, it's not necessarily sitcom-y, but it allowed a storyline to carry through in one fell swoop, in one episode. In 45 minutes, we're going to introduce the problem. We're going to see what the conflict is, and we'll watch the character overcome it.
The scene that followed was pretty good, where Justin was zoned stand out staring at the painting that Adrian had given him in the computer is also in the shot. And in the background, Brian's eating an apple in bed with a switchblade knife. It was a little corny, but I liked the way that it was shot. And I liked how we see Justin in kind of this downtrodden state. And then he realizes that there's something that he can do about it. And he starts to draw on the computer. And within seconds, this was kind of a funny sped up moment where he's just kind of like drawing lines on the computer. And all of a sudden it's Brian laying on his bed with an apple and a switchblade. But I did like the way
ta-da.
That, yeah, problem solved. Everything's all summed back up and everything's good. We see that Justin's creative spark came back and it was all because of that computer that Brian got him. So it was tidy. It was very tight, but I didn't have too many problems with it. I liked seeing it.
Well, I'm glad you found it something profound in it, Patrick. I just found it.
Sir, do you mock me?
maybe I am mocking you just a little.
It was cute. I liked
it. Okay, sure, it was cute, but I don't think it was as profound as you think it is. Like, of course he's going to find his creative spark. You know, they were obviously going to wrap this up in the, 41 minutes that this episode is? And yeah, I don't really, I guess this storyline did not grab me the way it grabbed you.
We'll be right back. In the meantime, click subscribe so that you don't miss an episode of Still Queer as Folk. Michael's volume is really turned up by all of his friends moving along in their life. We start to see him really struggle with it. We saw a couple hints of it in the first couple of episodes in this season. This one, it was on overdrive. We see just how unhappy he is at the big Q.
I mean, it went beyond whining. And so I'm glad Brian gave him a swift kick in the ass.
Oh, I loved his line.
Quit the fucking Q.
I just can't like make how it much clearer than it. That.
Yeah, totally.
Like, the reason why you're so freaking upset is because not only are you at the same place that you were when you came back, but you've actually downgraded and you're constantly being degraded by this asshole who has it in for you because you got the job that he wanted.
I think I'd look good with a new haircut. I think I would.
So what's wrong?
No, it's wrong. Why do you think something's wrong?
Because every time something's wrong, you want to change your hair.
That is so not true.
Michael's thinking about changing his hair.
Oh, God. Baby, what's wrong? Tell me.
That happens a lot to gay boys where they have like a weird breakup or something's going wrong and then they immediately change their hairstyle.
Yeah, now it's all about going silver. Ugh. Some people really pull it off, but oh my God, what a fad.
Yeah. Debbie does tell him to do what makes him happy. But the thing that really struck me here is that Michael has no idea whatsoever about what would make him happy. You would think that somebody that's like 30, 31... this would have occurred to him by now.
I think he knows what makes him happy, but he's seeing it from like a practical perspective in terms of being able to like afford, like make a living kind of thing, which on the one hand I get, but clearly he's miserable.
He does figure it out in 38
minutes. You have to make
minutes.
A radical shift. Honestly, you could have taken the opportunity of him coming back and starting fresh by not going right back to the big Q. Like, I don't know why he thought that was a good idea, but clearly
he needed work.
Sure, but that could have been like a temporary solution. And instead, he just fell right back into it and was just dealing with being...
It didn't bother him enough to make a change. And maybe that's why this was a little bit awkward, why it came up here, whereas all of a sudden it really did bother him. It wasn't the frog in the pan of water. All of a sudden, he was just like boiling. So, I don't know. He really wanted to follow his dream. He would have stayed with Dr. David, and Dr. David could have bought the comic store for him.
Very true.
I did like when Michael had to dress up as the big Q clown handing out balloons.
Oh, so degrading.
Yeah, it was necessary to carry this episode through, but I thought it was funny. I liked that they put him into that situation, and not just because at one point in my life I had to dress up as Chuck E. Cheese.
So thank now you. We have Carlton Dance from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, you and drag in the third grade, and now you were dressed up as Chuck E. Cheese. This is like a trifecta I never would have thought I would hear from you.
Renaissance man. That's me.
This is amazing. This is amazing news, Patrick. I've known you for like 4 or 5 years, and this is amazing.
Four or five years?
That's what it's been.
I think this was season one of Downton Abbey. When was that?
Well, I'm thinking about the time when we were talking first before we actually met.
That's a good point. I can go years without actually meeting people in person, so you should count yourself lucky, Matt.
Oh, and look at this. Here we are now.
Yes.
Look how far we've come.
Drinking the finest best boxed wine in this all side of the Midwest. Ravenswood. Michael had this great line where he said,
"Life sucks, kid.
Let's go, Jimmy.
Better you know it now than be disappointed later."
He is going full Pennywise.
I love how that mother just dragged the kid away.
She was probably worried he was going to like eat the kid.
Yeah.
It was great.
Another piece of lightweight writing, which wasn't terrible, was when Lindsay and Melanie just happened to show up at the big queue.
It looked like this was like a kid event. So I buy why they were there.
They showed up with Gus.
Yes.
Is that why?
Yes.
Okay.
Remember, they have a child.
There was a little bit of funny staging here where they were setting up for the event, and it was sort of clear that they were in a mall, but we know the Big Q to be a standalone big box store, so I just noticed that.
I don't know if continuity is like the biggest thing with Queer as Folk.
Yeah, especially with all the revolving tricks that come and go, played by the same actors. I did like how Melanie summed it up. She just says in this just really wispy voice,
"Don't ask."
Melanie kind of had a little bit of gall to say that because, yeah, it might have sucked for Michael, but he was doing honest work. It may not have been ideal work, but he was showing up. He was doing work. It's not that terrible. It's like you weren't being asked to do it for free, kid.
But I will say it's clear that he was taking the brunt of retaliation. That's what it felt like to me.
Maybe I can just relate because of the Chuck E. Cheese costume. But
maybe I would have been. I am a hard no, and I am going to go ahead and make my exit stage left. Bye.
I didn't exactly enjoy dressing up as Chuck E. Cheese, but they paid me for it. That was my job, so I did it.
No. I have nothing else to say but no. No, granted, because that was your job, sure. But him dressing up as a clown, even his boss said it. It was sort of a rite of passage, or it got close to hazing.
Hazing or bullying or something like that. Michael's really come a long way from being the gold Miata driving doctor's wife a couple episodes ago.
To being a literal clown.
Yeah. Oh, Michael's been through quite the gin mill here. The scene where Michael hatched his idea to buy the comic store was nicely shot. This was another pondering moment. It was almost a direct play on the scene that we saw with Justin sitting on the sofa, kind of staring into space. Michael starts out on the sofa, just kind of staring into space, and he's just beat after a long day of being a clown at work. And he makes eye contact with his gigantic Captain Astro thing, whatever that is.
The cutout?
Yeah. Then he goes to the bedroom and takes a look at his Captain Astro number one comic that Brian gave him for his birthday in season one. And that's where it started to click with him. He could take that and get some capital and do something. He'd found out that Buzzy, the stoner comic book owner, was selling
such a great name too.
Buzzy, yeah.
Was going to St. Petersburg, Florida.
So we see this little glimmer, but then Michael goes back to work and he finally stood up to Andrew, the boss.
And Andrew thought he had him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do it or you're fired. You know, like, what is he going to do?
Instead, he said, "Fuck off." And then sticks his tongue
fuck
in his
you.
Mouth.
He said, "Fuck you."
Fuck you. Comma, you.
Fuck you. And then, yes, sticks his tongue down Andrew's throat and says, "So long, lover boy," or something like that.
Yeah.
In which Andrew realizes that Michael was the drag queen from the Pride Parade.
Did you think it was okay that he just went up to this guy and like assaulted him?
For 2002, it was poetic justice.
No, I mean, that said, I've had a number of total strangers in a gay bar come up and do that to me, but I think the circumstances are different. You're in like a kind of a drunken atmosphere. It's more of a party atmosphere. This is at the Big Q, which is essentially
a family establishment.
That's right, according to Andrew. So I'm not sure if I like the way that he keeps kissing Andrew. That's his boss.
Not anymore.
It's true. But the first time at Pride, it was his boss. And I guess technically he quit and then kissed him. So,
yes.
Okay. Kind of get there.
I wonder if he got legal advice from Melanie before doing such.
Melanie practices all law, as we know.
Yes. Remember, she practices law.
Yeah. Debbie is strangely opposed to Michael quitting. She finds out that he quit and just goes through the roof and shows up at his house. She called the Big Q and found out that he doesn't work there. So she immediately drives over to his house.
It's like, what did you do?
I just called the Big Q. They said that you no longer work there? That you quit?
That's right, Ma.
Why would you do a stupid thing like that?
She had a shirt on that said, "You say tomato, I say fuck off." I want to get that shirt.
I'm going to go on Etsy after this episode.
Hey, for our line of merch, we should start to like remake all of Debbie's shirts. It'll be the Debbie shirt collection.
I'm into that.
There was another weird eBay reference with Michael selling his comic to buy the store. This is not the first time. Get off your fucking phone.
I'm looking at you say tomato, I say fuck off. I want to see if it's available.
I might have to keep that in this episode.
That's right. I don't see any shirts, but I see a lot of songs. That's weird. What the hell? Oh, I say tomato, I say fuck you. Oh, no. I mean, I don't know if this is quite her shirt, but yeah, there's some shirts. There's some shirts. We have options.
We've got options. So eBay keeps coming up in this show. It was almost like the writers, Conan Lippman and Ephraim Seeger, needed to make the show contemporaneous. It's just weird that they keep bringing up eBay. Dr. David was talking about eBay. Hank talked about eBay. Michael talks about eBay.
Well, the internet was still very much somewhat still coming into prominence.
You'd think that eBay is the only place to go.
That and Ask Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves, yeah. So eventually Brian engages in what can be considered now illegal eBay bid shilling to artificially yes. drive the price up. The thing that struck me is that it only took Michael $10,000 to buy Buzzy's comic store. So let's see.
It's a small down payment for a commercial space.
Well, he took over the lease, I guess, for the space, and he bought all the inventory and all the contents of the store for $10,000. Do you think he was making payments on it after that $10,000?
Oh, he had to have been.
I just thought that this part was just a little too perfect. It's too perfect of a bow.
Pat, yeah.
Yeah, he sells the comic book that Brian gave him for his birthday in order to start a comic book store for $10,000.
Exactly, like, $10,000.
It shouldn't be that hard for somebody to like raise $10,000 if they really wanted to frugal for a while with the goal of buying the store. So it was just kind of a weird little plot device that was a little thin. I wish it would have been harder for him to do it. It was too easy for him to buy his
Everyone's getting
dream.
Their dreams very easily in this episode.
Yeah, totally. So Michael bought the store, and as he's going to the store for the first time, which I don't know how he bought the store so quick. Did he just bring a suitcase of $10,000 to Buzzy and say, have fun?
One store, please.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I guess with the way that Conan Lippman and Seeger built up the Buzzy character, I guess it's not out of the realm of possibility that Buzzy would just take $10,000 and hit the road.
Yeah.
He is a stoner. So
you're like, great, thanks, bye.
Yeah, so maybe that part did work. So he buys the store, shows up just as the ironic drag kings come wandering past singing the same song that the intro happened.
Maybe it's meant to be, maybe it's meant to have some sort of dream quality to it, you know, in terms of having the drag kings walk by with that same song, the fact that they framed the episode with that. Maybe it's supposed to be a little surreal and a little
stylistic. Yeah, I don't know how
stylistic.
Many drag king troops just wander down the streets of Liberty Avenue singing.
They do it all the time here in Chicago.
Usually after dark, though, right?
No, there are some in broad daylight, you know, just making their way after brunch kind of thing.
It tied the episode together really nicely. And so far, we've seen Justin start to get his dream back, which is to go to art school. Michael's got his dream back to buy the comic store.
Like what you hear? Be sure to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. We like those 5 stars.
Still, queer as folk.
Let's break down Ted's dreams for this episode.
Oh,
because
I love this part.
Ted is introduced in this episode whacking it.
Aggressively.
At this point, his dick has got to be raw and peeling. I mean, that's... I didn't really... He does hand lotion to Emmett as they're watching.
That was lube.
Lube. At one point, to say you want to join.
Yeah, squeeze a nipple.
And it's like, if you want to help get in here and squeeze a nipple, I was like, Jesus, Ted.
A little of the over-the-top thing going on in this episode was when Brian, Emmett, and Michael staged the masturbation intervention. It was melodrama, but I thought it was funny as hell.
Oh, it was meant for humor.
Yeah, I loved it. Without Ted's routine accounting job, he's just completely aimless, and he just completely devolved into this whacking off character that had nothing else to do.
Well, when we know that he is a pornography connoisseur.
Oh, who isn't?
I mean, he...
Right before we started recording today, Matt and I were talking about a certain Helix Studios porn star. Do we call them stars? Or an actor?
Actor?
Model?
Sure.
Model.
Yeah.
Model. Of some acquaintance of ours. And so in one way, I think Matt and I have enough porn knowledge to kind of rival Ted here in this case.
Between the two of us and our years of experience with porn. Yes, I'm sure we do.
And porn models. Gail Harold had this little great physical acting moment where he's calling the CFO at his firm to arrange for a job for Ted. And he had a cum-soaked tissue stuck to his foot. And he's just dancing around him.
Trusted to no end.
He tries scraping it off on the coffee table.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I really like that. I like those moments when Gail Harold kind of surprises me. Yeah, as a pretty much first-time actor here, I like when he pulls these things out and he just carries it off really well. I liked it.
And he manages to line up a new job for Ted at his ad agency.
Surprise.
That was very easy. Ted goes in there. You know, he's going to make it. He's going to survive because he's back doing what he knows. And the way the introduction with the boss goes shows that being in the same job, doing the same thing for the same type of person over and over again, now is seeping in with Ted.
I did like those fisheye shots that
yes,
because David Wellington used there.
Because then he even calls the new boss Wartshafter and then like screws up his name and like tries to make it back and the guy just walks off.
Yeah, I think anyone that's ever done a job that they didn't really want to do can relate to this scene where you show up on your first day, you don't want to really be there, but you know you got to do it because you're either broke or it's just something you got to do. And those fisheye shots just kept closing in on Ted. It was just kind of like sucking him into this corporate world that surprisingly he didn't want to be in. Because remember, up until now, we really thought that was in his blood, that he was an accountant. That was all he wanted to be. He wanted to be Boring Ted. This is new, where we see him not wanting to go into that. So maybe it's like 4-day whackathon and his pride pity fuck really like helped him out there.
He cleared out the cobwebs of what he really wanted.
Yeah, he's finding that what that dream is going to be. I like that part where he's returning that bag of VHS porn tapes. That really dated the show. It's like,
first of all,
he's
checking out videos. They're VHSs. And while he's there, and after he returns all of them, there is another person looking to buy or
a consumer.
Rent. There's another consumer of pornography looking for recommendations. And I love that the guy behind the counter is like, you think I watch this shit? Ask him.
Can I read the first one?
Please go ahead.
We've got three titles written down here. I'll read the first one. Your Ass Licked Park.
Forrest Dump.
That one referenced a plate job. I can't believe that they actually said that.
What is that?
You don't know what a plate job is?
No, I do not. Why don't you enlighten me, Patrick?
So the idea is there is a plain glass plate that's clear that you can see through, and there's a person underneath it, and then the person on the top takes a dump onto the plate while the person underneath the plate is just kind of holding it. Plate job.
Never would have thought Ted was into scat.
I had to look it up.
Let's just read this last one, because I actually thought this last title was actually very clever.
I didn't know what this one meant.
Really?
Armageddon?
Armageddon?
Oh. I think that there is better ones, like Shaving
it was about
Ryan's Privates.
Arm and Head or, In.
Well, I get that part, but...
And it's Armageddon. That's why he was talking about like the best fisting scene on a comet or whatever. It was great.
Oh. Now I get it.
And I know you don't want to miss a thing.
Yeah, I'm all about Helix porn. None of this fancy VHS porn stuff here. I did like that. Unwittingly, Melanie is the one that planted the idea of starting the porn company in Ted's head.
No, you are amazing. That's why I wouldn't call knowing every boy bang flick ever made a significant contribution to cultural literacy.
Hey, Missy Big Word. Yeah, I'm not ashamed of loving porn. Pornography happens to serve an important and profoundly humane service.
Oh, this ought to be.
I thought that was really funny.
But it was supposed to be like a joke, right?
Kind of, but she didn't know she was doing it, but she planted that idea. And then she promptly had to rush off to court, which is another moment of...
Because law.
Yeah, Melanie practicing law. She's just like hanging out with Ted at the porn shop, and then it's like, I have to get to court. It's like, what? There was a hilarious scene where Ted shows up at Woody's and buys a round of shots for everyone and announces that he's starting his porn company.
I'm finally ready to become a productive part of society again. I want to give back to the community, feel a sense of pride, of purpose.
That's wonderful, sweetheart.
So, I've decided to quit my new job and start my own porno website.
Melanie and Lindsay did not drink their shot.
Because they were in shock.
Everybody else looked a little surprised, except for Brian, who had this great reaction where he just kind of has this cute little chuckle and then just throws his shot back. I loved it.
You know what? I bet in some way that makes Ted finally interesting to him.
True.
Like, you would have thought he would have been upset, like, I got you this job, man.
Yeah.
But instead he's like, you're going to start a porn company.
Yeah. When he first started talking about it, Brian was a little dismayed that he quit his job. And then as soon as he found out that he's starting the porn company,
he's like, hey, all right.
Yeah. So a little piece of trivia that I wrote down here is that the hot student in Justin's art class was played by Lucas Bryant. That actor comes back two more times as a minor character named Tucker. Both of those episodes are in season 5. I don't remember who that character was. I just saw that in the credits. So Lucas Bryant, the hot artist, comes back.
Oh, hot artist. Okay. I thought maybe he was the model.
Yeah,
the model.
Maybe he was.
The model had a nice ass.
Just based on the what Lucas Bryant looks like, I thought it was one of the kids painting. Not sure. So let's wrap up this episode.
Let's.
What did you give it for timeliness, Matt?
Give it a 2.
Ooh, ouch. Do tell.
I mean, the first thing I wrote was just, we have this whole thing with the VHSs and the quote unquote state-of-the-art computer that Justin is learning to draw on, and the way that the dean of the art school decides to try and use that against Justin to maybe make him rethink about being in art school, like he'll fall behind because he might have a disability. The whole thing just reeked of datedness. I was not a fan of it.
I gave this one a 4 out of 5. I agree. It was dated in many places, like the VHS tapes, that vintage iMac, frantic eBay bidding. But that theme of finding a line of work that is closer to your dream, I think will always be timely. I think maybe
we have different definitions of timeliness compared to relatability.
Because relatability is the third topic that we rate these on.
Right. Well, I think what you just described as timely, I describe as relatable.
Okay. Fair enough.
So when we get there.
How about information accuracy?
2. Again, maybe I could bump it up to a 3 because, yeah, you know, in 2002, you know, you were checking out VHSs at stores. But other than that, there wasn't really anything else that could, you know, needed the accuracy.
I gave it a 5. Mostly because there wasn't really anything in this episode that was wrong. There wasn't anything that was glaringly wrong. Like the example we use a lot with Queer as Folk is when they portray an HIV positive person as one step away from death. So that's a modern day information inaccuracy. I didn't pick up on anything like that in this episode. We just saw everything kind of falling into place, I guess. So I didn't see any factual errors.
Fair.
How about relatability?
This I ranked a little higher. I gave it a 3 because I think the overall theme they were going for, I buy in terms of finding your purpose in life and the fact that the three characters we were following, Justin, Michael, and Ted, were all trying to find that. The fact that they all found it within the next 42 minutes was pretty impressive. But I liked it that they all went on that journey together and they were all very different things. Mm-hmm. But it was all about, you know, finding that purpose. So, you know, I gave it a 3. I found it relatable-ish.
I gave it a 5. Because I really love this episode. Even though I remembered thinking that it wasn't that great, and even last week I was just kind of bemoaning the fact that I was going to have to watch it. For some reason, I just found this nice sentimental journey for Justin, Michael, and Ted. And I just like the way that they were able to identify something and then start to accomplish it. Because none of them really have proven it yet. Ted just says he's going to start a porn company. Michael bought a comic store, but that's by no means going to be a success. Justin decides to go back to art school with his computer. So they didn't really accomplish that dream, but they took those steps in doing it. And that's, I think, what I liked is I like that Teddy Roosevelt line about the man in the arena. And I think we saw that here, where they don't necessarily have to succeed, but as long as they're trying, then they can win us over.
Well, and that wraps up this episode.
And this was episode 5 of season 2, Wherever That Dream May Lead You.
Next week, we'll cover episode 6, Mixed Blessings. It's like me.
If you liked our show, please give us 5 stars on iTunes and subscribe. It really means a lot to us.
And be sure to like us on Facebook. Until next time, I'm Matt Dominguez.
And I'm Patrick Randall. We'll see you next week. Still, Queer as Folk was written and performed by Patrick Randall and Matt Dominguez. Made with love in Chicago.